powerlessness. This truly malicious technique is used in wartime interrogations to make a target feel a lack of confidence in their convictions. A social engineer can utilize this tactic by taking away the target's agency by presenting the facts you received from someone with authority, thus creating a powerless feeling, creating a strong emotional response in the target. Strong emotional responses include everything from doubt to guilt to humiliation and more. If the feelings are intense enough, they can cause the target to alter their whole belief system. A social engineer must be careful not to create damaging negative emotions. But using tactics that create an emotional response based on fear of loss or punishment can prove beneficial to your SE goal. Heavy intimidation. Fear of physical pain or other dire circumstances can be used to make a target crack under pressure. Again, most social engineers will not go this route unless they are using corporate espionage as a tactic. But in normal social engineering, this tactic utilizes perceived authority to build strong fear and feelings of potential loss. Most times, however, manipulation is not so extreme. On its very basic level, imagine you are in a crowded room and someone calls out your name. What is your reaction? Usually, it is to turn around or respond with a yes. You have been manipulated, but not necessarily in a bad way. On a psychological level, being manipulated is even more profound. Notice what happens when you make that preceding interaction happen. Your brain hears your name, and you automatically formulate an answer. Yes? The connection between that answer and your vocal response is very short. Even if you made no vocal response, or if the name calling is not targeted to you personally, if a question is asked, your mind will formulate an answer. Just being in close proximity of two people conversing and overhearing a question will cause your mind to formulate an answer. The answer can be an image or sound in your mind. If a target overhears two people talking about what someone looks like, his mind will form a mental picture. If you hear two people telling a joke about a chicken crossing the road, you may picture the chicken, the road, or the whole scene. This type of manipulation is just the beginning of what you can do. Another manipulation tactic is that of conditioning. People can be conditioned to connect certain sounds or actions with feelings and emotions. If every time something positive is mentioned, a person hears a pin click, after a short time, the target can be conditioned to associate a positive feeling with this sound. One of the most classic examples of conditioning was Ivan Pavlov and what we call Pavlov's dog, which was discussed in Chapter 5. The question then becomes whether you can use this type of conditioning on people. Although making targets salivate is not on most social engineers' priority list, although it would be humorous, there are ways to condition a target to react to certain sets of input the way you want them to react. To find the answer, listen to the following sections, which provide a few examples of manipulation in business and marketing to set a foundation for discussion and an analysis flow of how to use manipulation on a personal level. To recall or not to recall. In May 2010, the Washington Post reported an interesting story. The maker of children's Tylenol, Motrin, Benadryl, and Zyrtec, among other liquid over-the-counter medicines, discovered a defective batch of Motrin and didn't want to perform a recall due to the costs of such an action. What was the company's answer? It used manipulation. The company hired a slew of contractors to go from store to store and buy back all the Motrin in the store, which would then be destroyed. Unfortunately, its plans were foiled when a contractor dropped a paper in one store that outlined the plot, which was then reported to the Federal Drug Administration. On a side note, the FDA did make that company recall 136 million bottles in just one out of four recalls. Unfortunately, it was too late because 775 cases were reported of children and infants who had adverse reactions to this tainted batch, with 37 ending in death. The reports are not conclusive whether the deaths were the result of the bad Motrin or a reaction to the Motrin. That is not the focus here. This is a very dark example of manipulation, or at least attempted manipulation. To protect this company's image, it was willing to forego the proper procedures and the safety of children all over the world. It attempted to manipulate the system, and in the process, people lost their lives. The documentation that was dropped in the store discussed how the contractors were under orders to buy the product back and not mention recall at any point in time. When the company was caught, it deployed many interesting manipulation tactics. It deflected the situation by saying the reason for the action was its experts didn't think a significant risk existed to children. It followed this statement by a formal apology and the firing of 6 top executives. Then, the real manipulation came in. While being questioned, the company stated that they were not trying to do a phantom recall, as it was being called. The company was testing the alleged damaged batch by having the contractors buy it back to be tested. If it was found faulty, the company would have taken the proper procedures. This company attempted to use a manipulation technique called diversion, to divert attention away from what they were really doing to make it seem better than it was. In addition, it used a cover-up technique to manipulate the thinking of those who disagreed with their actions by issuing statements that the company was trying to do testing to determine if there was need for a recall. This type of manipulation is worth discussing because a diversion tactic can work on a much smaller scale in a personal setting too. If you are caught in an area or place you shouldn't be, then having a good cover story that is believable can go a long way toward manipulating the target to allow you safe passage. Diverting the target's attention to something other than the problem at hand can give you enough time to redirect his or her concern. For example, if you are caught by a security guard, instead of getting nervous, you could simply look at him and say, "Do you know what I'm doing here? Did you hear that some USB keys have been lost with very important data on them? It is imperative we find them before anyone comes in tomorrow. Do you want to check the bathrooms?" Many of you probably never heard about the Motrin recall story, showing that the company did a good job of manipulating, so far, the media and the justice system to keep the limelight off it. Regardless, the situation outlines how diversion and cover-up can be used in manipulation. Anxiety cured at last. In 1998, SmithKline Beecham, one of the largest pharmaceutical companies in the world, launched an ad campaign designed to educate the masses about something it called social anxiety disorder. It planted 50 press stories and surveys with questions like, "Do you have social anxiety disorder?" These quizzes and surveys were geared to educate people on this disorder and how to tell whether they suffer from it. Later that year, it changed its marketing campaign copy in medical journals from "Paxil means peace in depression, panic disorder, and OCD" to "Show them they can, the first and only approved treatment for social anxiety disorder." This change cost the company about $1 million to make. In 1999, a $30 million campaign was launched on print and television announcing that SmithKline Beecham found the cure for social anxiety disorder, and its name is Paxil. Using the data from the surveys and quizzes, the company bought spots in some of the hottest television shows at the time and spouted statistics that 10 million Americans suffer from SAD, social anxiety disorder. And now there is hope. By 2000, Paxil's sales accounted for half of the increase in the entire market. The company became number one in the U.S. selective serotonin reuptake inhibitor market for new retail prescriptions in 2000. In 2001, it won FDA approval to market Paxil for both generalized anxiety disorder and post-traumatic stress disorder. The 9/11 attacks resulted in a dramatic increase in prescriptions for all antidepressants and anxiety drugs. During this time, Paxil's advertising positioned it as an answer to the uncontrollable feelings of fear and helplessness that many people felt in the aftermath of the attacks. I am not saying that these drugs do not work, or that the company's motive is malicious, but I find this case particularly interesting in that the manipulation of the market started with education and ended with a massive increase in sales, while creating new disorders along the way. This type of case-building manipulation is often used in marketing, but is also used in politics, and even on a personal level, presenting a problem that is terrible, but then presenting facts that you have derived as proof of why what you say is true. On one episode of The Real Hustle, Paul Wilson set up a scenario where he had to extract a famous star they were using in a scam to steal some CDs from a store. The store clerk detained the star and waited for the cops to arrive. Paul walked in, identified himself as a cop, flashed his wallet with nothing more than a picture of his kids in it, and was able to arrest the star, take the CDs and the money in the cash register as evidence, and leave unquestioned. This story is an excellent example of this type of case-building manipulation. Paul had a problem, the thieving star, and presented himself as the solution, the cop, to the problem. Whatever the scenario, build the case for what a good person you are before presenting your request. And that case makes the request more palatable to the person you're trying to manipulate. You can't make me buy that. Kmart. I felt like just leaving this section at that, but I think I should explain more. Kmart developed an idea it called the planogram, which is a diagram that shows retailers how to display their products based on colors, sizes, and other criteria to manipulate their customers to want to buy and spend the most. Planograms are designed to create optimal visual and commercial product placement. The use of these planograms is a form of manipulation because researchers have studied how people shop, think, and buy. Understanding these things help them develop mechanisms to control the visual input to increase shoppers' desire to buy. Software, as well as whole companies, are devoted to planning and executing these planograms for the maximum effect on keeping shoppers shopping. Three different layouts are used to manipulate shoppers. Horizontal product placement. To increase a customer's concentration on a certain article, a multiple horizontal placement side by side of one product is applied. Some retailers found that a minimum placement range between 15 and 30 centimeters of a single product is necessary to achieve an increase in customer attentiveness. Vertical product placement. A different method used is the vertical product placement. Here, one product is placed on more than one shelf level to achieve 15 to 30 centimeter placement space. Block placement. Products that have something in common are placed in a block. This can be done side by side, on top of each other, centered, or using magnetic hangers. Planograms are not the only method of manipulating shoppers. One test done involved a shopping mall running specifically designed music loops. The result was that those shoppers stayed in the mall an average of 18% longer than when the music was not running. In the Journal of Business Research, Jean-Charles Chabot and Richard Michon published a study they performed in a Canadian shopping mall. The researchers pumped specially designed aromas into the air that were supposed to trigger happiness and the desire to buy. The result there was that an average of $50 more per shopper was spent in that week-long study. Your trips to the shopping malls and grocery stores will never be the same now. However, you can learn a lot from these methods and experiments. Knowing how people group things in their brains can affect how you organize your shelves to manipulate the feelings, emotions, and thoughts of your targets. On the topic of colors, they are a major way to manipulate the emotions of a target. Many of the same principles apply to colors as they do to product placement. The colors you choose to wear or use can affect the target. A lot of research has been done on colors and their effects. The following is a short list of some ways a particular color could affect the thinking or emotions of another person. White. White is often associated with purity, light, and cleanliness. It gives feelings of safety and neutrality, as well as goodness and faith. This is why white is often used in weddings or as the color of surrender. Black. Black often denotes power, elegance, mystery, and strength. It is used to denote authority, depth, and stability. Black gives the feeling of calmness and tranquility. Because it contrasts with other colors, it can also be used to enhance other colors. Red. Red is associated with excitement and joy. It is a color filled with celebration, action, and energy. It can denote good health, speed, passion, desire, and love. Red can stimulate emotions as well as increase heart rate, respiration, and blood pressure. Red can trigger strong emotions. Use caution when using red. Even though it can denote power and impulsiveness, it can denote force, intimidation, and conquest, even violence and revenge. Be careful how you use red. Orange. Orange gives warmth, enthusiasm, attraction, determination, strength, and endurance. It can stimulate a person to feel invigorated, even stimulate his or her appetite. Orange is another color to be cautious with. Although using orange has many good benefits, like making the viewer feel warm and attracted to you or your product, too much or the wrong combination can create feelings of insecurity, ignorance, and sluggishness. Gold. Gold is usually associated with illumination, wisdom, wealth, and prestige. Yellow. Yellow is associated with energy and optimism, joy, and cheerfulness, loyalty, and freshness. It can cause a person to feel focused and attentive. Yellow also has an impact on a person's memory. Why are so many sticky notes yellow? Used in small amounts, it can trigger positive emotions, but too much can cause a target to lose focus or feel criticized. Green. Green is often associated with nature, harmony, life, fertility, ambition, protection, and peace. It can produce a very calming effect, making someone feel safe. Green is another powerful color, but can also make one feel greedy, guilty, jealousy, and disordered if used in the wrong setting or used too much. Blue. Blue is associated with the color of the sky and ocean. It can be linked to intelligence, intuition, truth, tranquility, health, power, and knowledge. It is very calming and cooling, and has been known to slow down the metabolism. Blue is the easiest color for the eyes to focus on. It can have many positive effects, but be careful not to make the target feel cold or depressed. Purple. Purple is associated with royalty, nobility, luxury, creativity, and mystery. Brown. Brown is associated with earth, reliability, approachability, convention, and order. It can create emotions of being rooted or connected, or having a sense of order. How can you use all of this information? I'm not suggesting that with a simple blue outfit you can make someone feel calm enough to hand you her password. Yet you can use this information to plan your attack vectors, ensuring you have the best opportunity to succeed, which includes how you look and how you are dressed. A social engineer would want to analyze the target they will be calling on and make sure the colors they choose to wear will augment their ability to manipulate the target and not turn them off. For example, knowing that green may elicit feelings of greed or ambition can help a social engineer decide not to wear green to a meeting with a charity where it might conjure feelings and emotions contrary to the charity's mission. Wearing something blue to a lawyer's office, on the other hand, can have a calming effect, allowing the lawyer to open up more. Careful planning and sensible use of these tactics can help ensure the success of your social engineering audits. Conditioning targets to respond positively. Conditioning is used in everything from normal conversation to marketing to malicious manipulation. Just like Pavlov's dog, People have been conditioned to respond to certain items. Human nature is often used to manipulate the majority of people to take actions the manipulators want. When the majority of people think of babies, they will smile. We will find talking animals cute. And we might even be manipulated to sing a jingle for a popular product in our head. These tactics are so covert that many times we don't even know they are working. Many times I find myself wondering what a scantily clad bikini-wearing woman has to do with beer. One example of how conditioning is used is Michelin tires. For years, this company has used babies in its ads. Why? Because so much is riding on your tires. But these ads have more to them. You see a baby, you smile, and you are happy. That emotion triggers a positive response, and that response conditions you to be agreeable to what is told to you next. When you see the baby, you smile. When you see it enough, you are conditioned to think of warm, happy feelings when you see Michelin tires. Seeing a baby next to a tire makes you equate positive, happy feelings with that brand. This is an example of classic manipulation. Another advertisement that might have had many people wondering from Budweiser. Remember those popular frogs belching out Bud, Wise, and Er? What do frogs have to do with beer? Along those same lines, think of the more recent Clydesdale horse and his gang of animal friends. These ads are catchy, even funny the first time, but they're not really explaining why you want to buy this beer. This form of manipulation, conditioning, is subtle. You laugh at that commercial, and then later on, you pull into your local beer distributor, see a cardboard cutout of the frogs or horse, and smile to yourself, which creates that positive feeling that makes you feel agreeable to buying that product. These conditioning tactics are used often in the world of sales and marketing firms, with the goals of manipulating the consumer to buy their products over the competition. Social engineers aren't really selling a product, but they do want their targets to buy the lines they are selling, the pretext they are putting out there, and the actions they want the target to take. But why use manipulation? What are the incentives to utilizing this powerful form of control? The next section covers that very topic. Manipulation incentives. What are the incentives to manipulate someone? This question gets to the root of the methods, thinking, and tactics used in any manipulation. Not all manipulation is negative, but it is related to the incentives behind it. But each incentive can be positive or negative. What is an incentive? An incentive can be labeled as anything that motivates you to take an action. It can be money, love, success, or anything. Even negative emotions like hatred, jealousy, and envy. The main reasons why people choose to manipulate others can be broken down into three categories: financial, social, and ideological incentives. The following sections look at each of these incentives and how they apply to manipulation. Financial incentives. Financial incentives tend to be the most common, as in the cases mentioned earlier relating to increasing sales. Many scams have a financial incentive behind their tactics. How many people play the lottery every day with the hopes of getting that winning ticket? They may spend hundreds of dollars over time, and winning a $20 payoff makes them happy and keeps them coming back for more. A non-malicious example of financial incentive is coupons. If you buy this particular product at this particular store, you will get X dollars or cents off. If you are a thrifty shopper or want to try that product, you will go to that store. Many commercials that promote furthering your education, career, or skill set use financial incentives by painting a picture that your income will increase after their course or education. The malicious attacker's incentive for using manipulation is his own financial gain, and therefore his motivation and his technique will reflect that. For example, if the malicious social engineer's goal is to get his target to part with some of his hard-earned money, the social engineer will utilize pretexts that will be allowed to ask for money. Pretexts like charity organizations are suitable in this scenario, because asking for donations or financial information is not out of the ordinary. Ideological incentives. Ideological incentives are the most difficult to describe. Each person's ideals are different, and those ideals can affect the incentive. If your dream in life is to run a restaurant, then that is your passion. You will work longer hours and put in more effort than any of your employees. You will also work for less money because it is your dream or your motivation. For everyone else, it is just a job. Dreams and beliefs can be so ingrained in a person that separating them from a person can be almost impossible. When you hear the phrase, "I have a dream," did you think of Martin Luther King? Some people's dreams and goals are who they are, not what they think about. People tend to be drawn to those with similar dreams and goals, which is why the phrase "birds of a feather flock together" applies so well in this discussion. But it is also why so many people can be manipulated. Look at Christian evangelists, for example. People who have a faith and desire to believe in God flock together. Like-minded people can strengthen each other's faith and desire to do the right thing. But a televangelist can use that ideology to convince people that God's desire is for that particular church to prosper, therefore also lining the televangelist's pockets with cash. The televangelist gives a few motivating sermons and sheds some tears, and suddenly people are sending in the checks. The televangelists use the tools of both financial and social ideals to convert the listener to their ideals, so those people part with their hard-earned cash. What is interesting is that if you ask a follower how he feels about the preacher being way richer than he is, he believes it's God's will. His ideal set has been changed or manipulated. Ideological incentives can also be used for the good by educating people about morals, and even resorting to using fear as the incentive can have great effects on people. Ideological incentives are often taught to children through stories and fables that have meanings behind them. The Brothers Grimm are an excellent example of this type of incentive. Stories that often end in the bad characters suffering physical harm or even death, and the good characters persevering through all forms of hardships, builds on fear that being bad leads to death or some terrible punishment. Ideological incentives are used in marketing too, through placing ads where like-minded individuals often meet. For example, diaper companies market in family magazines. Animal shelters market at zoos. Athletic gear companies market at sporting events, and so on. This type of incentive gives a greater chance that the goods or services being advertised will be brought by those who share the same ideals. Ideological incentives are used to bring one's ideals in alignment with those of a like mind. Often, once people are sympathetic to a cause, is when the manipulation tactics start. Again, not all manipulation is bad, but it has to be used the proper way. Social incentives. Social incentives are probably the most widely used and the most complex set of incentives out there, especially when it comes to social engineering. Humans are social by nature. It is what we do in normal daily life. Social incentives also encompass all the other types of incentives. The right relationship can enhance your financial needs and can also adjust, align, or augment your ideals. It could be argued that social incentives are stronger than the other two types of incentives. The power that peer pressure holds over many people is easy to see. For young and old alike, the draw of conformity is powerful. Many times, that which is acceptable is directly linked to social incentive. One's outlook on life and self can be greatly affected by his or her social surroundings. In essence, peer pressure can exist even in the absence of direct peers. Am I good-looking? Well, that depends. If I am in the United States, where a supermodel is a size zero and the guys have muscles in places I didn't know muscles existed, probably not. If I am in ancient Rome, where maybe being larger meant I was rich and powerful, then I am. Your whole inner self is framed by your social view of the world. In 1975, the U.S. Air Force ran a study entitled Identification and Analysis of Social Incentives in Air Force Technical Training, to try to see the power of social incentives on creating leaders during training drills. It ran four different scenarios with a group and analyzed what effects that had on the students. The end results were that a certain social incentive, usually involving praise or positive reinforcement from peers or authority figures, created a strong bond between the students and instructors. The major conclusion of this entire research effort is that the management of social incentives is a particularly difficult art. While social incentives can be identified and scaled with considerable ease, manipulation and management of the same incentives requires considerably greater effort. The scaling data show high attractiveness value for various social incentives. The results of the field experiment show the positive influence of the acquaintanceship and psychological contract exercise on attitudes toward fellow trainees. Both of these findings underline the importance of social factors. In other words, increasing or decreasing the attractiveness of the social incentive is not too difficult once you know what motivates a person. This phenomenon is particularly evident in groups of teenagers. When they find out what bothers someone, it is often used as a weapon to force compliance. The larger the group that provides the pressure, the greater the chance the target will comply. This is a powerful statement. I wonder how that research would have gone if the researchers had been able to use the plethora of social media sites that existed today. Peer pressure is a strong influence, and everyone wants to fit in and be a part of the crowd. Social incentives work. In 2007, a group of researchers wrote a research paper entitled Social Incentives, the Causes and Consequences of Social Networks in the Workplace. The report is an interesting study along the lines of the Air Force study, but set in 2007. Basically, the researchers analyzed how those who have friends at work handle their jobs when they work in groups with their friends. Their conclusion? Our findings indicate there are social incentives. The presence of friends affects worker productivity, despite there being no externalities of worker effort onto their coworkers due to the production technology or compensation scheme in place. Due to social incentives, workers conform to a common norm when working together. The level of the norm is such that the presence of friends increases the productivity of workers who are less able than their friends and decreases the productivity of workers who are more able than their friends. Social incentives are a quantitatively important determinant of a worker's performance. As workers are paid piece rates based on individual productivity, the strength of social incentives is such that workers who are more able than their friends are willing to forego 10% of their earnings to conform to the norm. Workers who have at least one friend who is more able than themselves are willing to increase productivity by 10% to meet the norm. Overall, the distribution of worker ability is such that the latter effect dominates, so the net effect of social incentives on firm performance is positive. The presence of friends meant that a person would actually work harder or less hard depending on their normal work level. Peer pressure with the absence of actual pressure can affect people's work. The pressure is perceived by what is standard. Why? Maybe if a person could work faster or better, she probably didn't want to appear to be a know-it-all or brown noser, as these people can be called. Maybe if he is normally more of a slacker, he didn't want to appear lazy, so he pushed up the pace a little. In either case, their work ethic was affected by having friends. A good point for management is to always put the hardest workers and natural leaders over the group. But there is so much to learn in this research. This method is how social engineers use tailgating, being in a large crowd of people coming back from break or lunch, and looking like one of the employees minimizes the chance that the security guard will stop you while you walk through the doors. It is also how whole groups of people can be manipulated into thinking a certain action or attitude is acceptable. You can see this in the entertainment industry, as each year the standard of what is acceptable or moral seems to get lowered, yet this drop in standard is sold as freedom. These three incentives are not the only types that are used. They can branch off into other aspects beyond the scope of this book. But the question still arises of how you can use them as a social engineer. Manipulation in social engineering. Manipulation is less about making others think like you do and making them feel comfortable, and more about coercing them to do what you want. Coercion is not a friendly word. It means to force to act or think in a certain manner, or to dominate, restrain, or control by force. Manipulation and coercion use psychological force to alter the ideology, beliefs, attitudes, and behaviors of the target. The key to using them is to make the steps so small they are almost invisible. The social engineer doesn't want to alert the target he is being manipulated. Some of the following methods may be very controversial and downright horrible, but they are used each day by scammers, identity thieves, and the like. One of the goals of manipulation can be to create anxiety, stress, and undue social pressure. When a target feels that way, he is more likely to take an action the social engineer is manipulating them to take. With that in mind, you can see why manipulation is often thought of in a negative light. But it is used in social engineering and therefore must be discussed. Increasing a target's suggestibility. Increasing a target's suggestibility can involve using the neuro-linguistic programming skills discussed in Chapter 5 or other visual cues. Earlier, you heard about conditioning people with the use of pen clicks or other noises or gestures that can elicit an emotion even when words are not spoken. I once saw this in action when I was with a person who was manipulating a target. He used a pen click to indicate a positive thought. He would say something positive and then smile and click his pen. Literally, I saw the person begin to smile after about 4 or 5 times of hearing the pen click. He then brought up a very depressing subject and clicked his pen, and then the target smiled and felt instantly embarrassed. That embarrassment was the door he needed to manipulate the target to do what he wanted. Creating a situation where the other person feels susceptible to suggestion can be through repetition of ideas or other means that will soften the target to the ideas you are trying to present. A social engineer can make sure the whole setup is geared towards this manipulation. The phrases used, the word pictures painted, the clothing colors chosen to wear, all of it can make the target more susceptible. William Sargent, a controversial psychiatrist and author of the book Battle for the Mind, talks about the methods by which people are manipulated. According to Sargent, various types of beliefs can be implanted in people after the target has been disturbed by fear, anger, or excitement. These feelings cause heightened suggestibility and impaired judgment. A social engineer can use this device to their advantage by offering the target a suggestion that causes fear or excitement and then offering a solution that turns into a suggestion. For example, in the hit BBC TV show The Real Hustle, the cast ran a scam to show how this works when they set up a booth in a mall that allowed people to buy raffle tickets. People would buy a raffle ticket for a chance to win 3 prizes worth much more than the ticket they just bought. One woman bought the ticket, and of course, she won the biggest prize. Her excitement was extreme because she had never won anything like this before. At this point, Paul Wilson gave the suggestion to manipulate her. At the height of the excitement, he told her she had to call a phone number and provide her bank info to claim her prize. She did it without a second thought. The suggestion made sense, especially in light of her excitement. Knowing the target and his likes, dislikes, kids' names, favorite teams, and favorite foods, and then using this to create an emotional environment will make creating a susceptible atmosphere so much easier. Controlling the target's environment. Controlling the target's environment is often used in online social engineering scams and identity theft. Becoming part of the same social networks and groups gives the attacker the chance to have FaceTime, to be able to manipulate targets into acting or thinking the way the attacker wants. Being able to use a target's social networks to find out what triggers they have is also a powerful tool. I used this method once when searching for an illegal scammer for a client who wanted to get the scammer's contact details. I was able to gain an account on a forum he used to post his achievements. Using this tactic of getting into his environment, then befriending him, I was able to gain his trust, use his social networks to know what he was doing, and eventually get his contact info. Any method used to control the environment of the target can be used in this manipulation technique. Controlling the environment can be as simple as approaching when you know you have the least chance of interruption, or allowing a target to see or not see something that will cause a reaction. Of course, unless you plan on bringing your target to a dark closet, you can't really control his whole environment, so controlling as much as you can will take planning and research. After you locate your target's social circles, whether online or in the real world, you will need to spend time planning how you will get in to control that environment. Once inside, what elements do you want to control? A good social engineer will not come in running for the kill shot, but will take time to build a relationship and gather information before the final blow is administered. Environment control is often used in police or wartime interrogations. The environment where the questioning will take place will have a certain atmosphere to make the target feel at ease, nervous, scared, anxious, or any other emotion the attacker or lead officer wants the target to feel. Forcing the target to reevaluate. Undermining a target's beliefs, awareness, or emotional control of a circumstance can have a very unsettling effect on him or her. This tactic is very negative because it is used to make a target doubt what he or she has been told to be true. Cults use this tactic to prey upon those looking for guidance through life. Many times, people who feel lost or confused are convinced that their whole belief system needs to be reevaluated. When the cults have control, they can be so convincing that the victims can be thoroughly convinced that their family and friends do not know what is best. On a personal social engineering level, you can make a person reevaluate the beliefs he has been taught about what is safe and what is not, or what is corporate policy and what is not. Each day, social engineers use similar attacks by presenting one well-thought-out question that can cause the target to reevaluate his stand on a topic and cause him to falter. For example, in this economy, salespeople are hungry to make sales. And you could call the sales department of a company that happens to have a strict policy about downloading PDFs from the web without proper scans and precautions, yet you can still place this call. Hi, I'm with ABC Company and I want to place an order for your product that could be more than 10,000 pieces. My employer wants me to get 3 quotes to see whether you can do better. I have uploaded the quote package to our website. Can I give you the URL? I'm going to a meeting in 2 hours. Could you look over the package and get me a preliminary quote before then? Do you think this tactic would work? Most likely, the salesperson would download and execute that file with little to no thought. You have caused him to reevaluate the policy he has been taught. Making the target feel powerless. Making the target feel vulnerable or powerless is another very dark but very effective tactic. It is often used in social engineering when the pretext is an angry executive or someone who should have power over the target. Angry by the lack of response or the inability of the target to give quick answers, the attacker berates or threatens the target, causing him to doubt his position and feel a loss of power. Another more subtle way this is used is to undermine the belief system using social incentives. In one audit, I was stopped by a custodian while doing scans of the internal network. When she did the right thing for stopping me, I reacted with something like, "Did you know that each year this company deals with a constant battle against network breaches? I'm trying to secure you, and you are trying to stop me from doing my job." My overpowering demeanor caused her to feel powerless, and she backed down. Giving a target the impression he has no time to think or there is serious urgency can also make him feel powerless. He cannot take the time to think about how to handle a problem and therefore must make a decision in a way he knows he shouldn't. This tactic was used after the recent earthquakes in Haiti. A website was launched that claimed to have information on loved ones who might have been lost, because their claim was that no one was able to provide information on their loved ones but this group who set up the site. They could demand certain criteria be met to obtain this information. Many people, feeling hopeless and powerless, entered too much information and clicked things they knew they shouldn't, and in the end were damaged by it. Dishing out non-physical punishment. Closely linked to making the target feel powerless is making them feel guilt, humiliation, anxiety, or loss of privilege. These feelings can be so strong that a target might possibly do anything to regain favor. Guilt over not giving what was expected can cause humiliation and doubt, which can cause the target to react the way the attacker wants. I don't suggest using humiliation in most social engineering settings, but I have seen it used on a target in a team effort to open the door, and on another social engineering team member to soften the face of the target, making them more pliable to suggestion. The first attacker approached the target in a public setting, trying to get information. He was playing the role of someone important. In the middle of the conversation, an underling who happened to be female and on the team came up and asked a question that angered the first attacker. He reacted by saying, "You have to be the dumbest person I have ever met." In a fit of anger, he walked away. The female attacker looked dejected and hurt and was quickly comforted by the target, who fed into her act. The target's empathy allowed him to be manipulated to give out way more information than he wanted. Intimidating a target. Intimidation is not a tactic that you might think of using in a traditional sense in social engineering. You are not going to tie up your target and go all Jack Bauer on him. But you can use intimidation in subtle ways. Suggesting that failure to comply can lead to being laid off or other adverse consequences can intimidate the target to react a certain way. Governments often use this tactic to manipulate society to believe that the economic system is collapsing. This way, they can control the emotions of those they govern. You can use it in a social engineering audit even by having an intimidating appearance. Looking busy, upset, and on a mission can intimidate many. Talking with very authoritative expressions can also intimidate people. In business, sending things by certified mail or courier connotes a level of intimidation. Making the person sign for a package whose contents are unknown can make some people intimidated. The goal of this manipulation tactic is to make the target feel uneasy and anxious, which can cause him to react in a way he will later regret, but by then, it's too late. The darker manipulation techniques are used successfully by social engineers and professional auditors. Manipulating a person to feel completely helpless causes him or her to feel that giving in to the attacker makes sense. That really is where manipulation differs in a social engineering practice from other forms of influence. With negative manipulation, the social engineer leaves and doesn't care how the target feels later on. Even if a target realizes he has been hacked, it doesn't matter because the damage is done and the company or person is already infiltrated. Other aspects of social engineering manipulation are just as powerful, but not so dark. Using positive manipulation. Positive manipulation has the same goals in mind as negative manipulation. In the end, the target is in alignment with your thoughts and desires. The differences are in how you get there. But in positive manipulation, the target doesn't need therapy when you're done. Over my years of research, I have compiled some tips about how parents interact with their children to get them to comply with the parents' wishes. A few of its points on positive manipulation are useful for social engineers. The following sections cover some of these positive techniques. Disconnect your emotion from their behavior. Keeping your emotions separate from your target's behavior is important. As soon as you let your emotions get involved, the target is manipulating you. You can feel emotion, of course, but be in control of what you feel and how you display what you are feeling. You do not want to be the one out of control. You also want to control the negative emotions as much as possible so you can remain in control at all times. Disconnecting your emotions can also put people at ease. This doesn't mean being devoid of emotion. That is not comforting to people. But if someone is really upset, showing the proper level of concern is good. But if your display of emotion is too much, you can offset the target and ruin the gig. Keeping your emotions in alignment with the pretext you are trying to achieve. If you do not allow your emotions to get involved, you can remain in control at all times. A good social engineer is able to do this despite the actions or attitudes displayed by the target. If the target is upset, mad, belligerent, rude, or if any other negative emotion is displayed, a good social engineer remains calm, cool, and collected. Look for the positive to mention. Whenever you can, find something to make a joke about or compliment, but without being creepy. You don't want to walk up to the security guard and say, "So, two nuns walk into a bar." This method probably won't go over too well. At the same time, you can't walk into the front office and say to the girl behind the counter, "Wow, you're pretty." Finding something positive to mention puts everyone at ease. But it must be balanced, controlled, and in good taste. Using the example of approaching a security guard after introducing yourself, complimenting the picture of her children by saying something like, "Wow, she is really cute. How old? 4? 5? I have a little girl at home too," can go a long way toward opening the door. Assume. You have probably heard what they say about people who assume, but in this case, assume it all. Assume that the target will act the way you want. Assume he will answer the way you want. Assume he will grant you all your requests. Assume with the questions you ask and the statements you make. When I come back from the server room, this statement assumes you belong there, and you are already granted access. In the security guard situation mentioned earlier, after the compliment, maybe offer a follow-up. When I get back from checking the servers, I will show you a picture of my daughter. Assuming that what you want will occur is a strong point too, because it affects your mental outlook. You must have the mental outlook that you are getting what you came for. That belief system will create a new body language and facial expressions that will feed your pretext. If you go on in expecting failure, you will fail, or at best, it will affect your body language and facial expressions. If you have the mental outlook that the deal is done, the same will occur. A word of caution, though, don't take this step so far you become arrogant. For example, going in thinking, "Of course I have this in the bag because I am amazing and the best," can affect the way you come off and turn off the target quickly. Try different opening lines. Starting a conversation with the standard "why, what, when" is common, but try a different approach and see what happens. The research group that runs a popular dating site, OkCupid.com, compiled data that shows the value of starting out with non-traditional openers. Remember the discussion about compliments? Well, the OkCupid guys found that starting off with too big of a compliment had the reverse effect than what one would think. Words like sexy, beautiful, and hot had terrible effects on people. Whereas words like cool, awesome, and fascinating had a better effect. In usual greetings, these guys found that saying things like hi, hey, and hello left the target feeling blah and unmotivated. Whereas, how's it going? What's up? Howdy, and hola were strong openers to use. Of course, these stats are about dating, but the point to be learned is that people react better to non-traditional greetings. Similarly, in a social engineering situation, vary your approach, and you may notice an increase in the way the target reacts to the message. Use past tense. When you want to address anything negative that you do not want the target to repeat, put it in past tense. This technique puts the negative attitudes and actions in the past in his mind, presenting him with the new and improved clean slate on which to do things for you. For example, when you said I couldn't get in to meet Mr. Smith, as opposed to when you say I can't get in to meet Mr. Smith. Only verb tense changed. But the effect is very important. It gives the impression that the negative statement is so far in the past. Let's move on to something new and improved. It also makes the target feel that you feel it is in the past. Seek and destroy. Identify, map, and plan how you will handle any disruptive or negative attitudes and actions. Imagine if your pretext is to be a tech support guy who will gain access to the server room. In your previous calls, you knew that every day at 10 a.m., a large group goes out for a smoke break. You decide this is a good time as people are shuffling in and out. You go all prepared. But as you enter the building, the receptionist has just received some bad news and is an emotional mess. You should have a plan for handling this disruption. If you wait to think about how you will handle potential conversation stoppers or disruptive influences until the first time you hear them, you will most likely fail to handle them. That presents an interesting thought then. You have to sit back and think like the target. What objections would he raise? When a person he does not know calls or approaches him, what might he say? What objections might he raise? What attitudes would he portray? Thinking through these things can help you to make a game plan for these potential problems. Write down your thoughts and the target's potential objections and then role play. You have your spouse or friend play the mean gatekeeper or security guard. Of course, he or she cannot imitate elements such as facial expressions and so on, but you can give him or her a small list of conversation stoppers to choose from to test your comeback. Practice until you feel comfortable, but not scripted. Remember, the comeback is not to be structured so stiffly that you cannot alter it at all. Positive manipulation can have a very strong effect on the target. Not only does it not leave him feeling violated, but if done properly, he can feel accomplished, as if he did something good for the day. Summary. Manipulation is a key component to social engineering, as well as influence. This chapter covered areas of human behavior that spanned decades of research from some of the smartest minds on Earth. Common reactions to the thought of manipulating others might be, I don't want to manipulate people. It feels wrong to learn this. These comments represent the way most people think when they hear the word manipulation. Hopefully, you're now convinced that manipulation isn't always a dark art and can be used for good. The world of influence has been dissected, researched, and analyzed by some of today's brightest psychologists and researchers. This research served as the basis of my own research to develop the information in this chapter. The section on framing, for instance, can truly change the way you interact with people. And the concept of reciprocation can shape your thinking as a social engineer and how to utilize influence. Influence is such an amazing topic, though, that volumes of books are devoted to that topic alone. Understanding what triggers a person to motivate him to want to do a certain action and then having that action seem good to the target, that is the power of influence. This chapter illuminated the science and psychology of what makes people tick and clarified how influence is used by social engineers. Remember, influence and the art of persuasion are the process of getting someone else to want to do, react, think, or believe in the way you want them to. The power in this statement transcends social engineering and manipulation. It is the key to altering any frame.